The Marching Roundtable is proud to be an official media partner of Drum Corps International and Music for All.
I tell my PE teachers, my football coaches, my band directors, my art teachers, anyone who has an opportunity to have kids in their program or in their classes over a four-year period, they really can help you set the tone for what kind of culture and climate you're going to have at your school, because they have influence over the long arc of the student's career, not just one year or one period a day.
That's Dr. Greg Basham, a high school principal who started his teaching career as a band director. Greg brings a unique and valuable perspective to our series of conversations about three things I wish I had known when I started teaching.
I think we get too caught up in the, especially in band, chorus, and orchestra, where we have a performance or music performance assessment coming up, or a band contest. We get too caught up in the product and what that's going to look like for that 10 minutes or 6 minutes or 7 minutes, right? And don't get to really take a deep breath and pay a close attention to the process and all of the wonderful things that happen through that.
Everyone can watch the video version of this podcast at marchingartseducation.com. There's a link to that video where this podcast is located at the Marching Roundtable. Thanks to the sponsor of this podcast, Fred J. Miller Incorporated, found at fjminc.com. Dr. Greg Basham, with three things I wish I had known, on the Marching Roundtable.
This podcast is sponsored by FJM, Fred J. Miller Incorporated. FJM is the leader in marching arts uniform manufacturing and continues to lead the charge through groundbreaking design, superior service, and over 60 years of industry innovation. The Cesario collection of marching band uniforms is 100% machine washable, includes a limited lifetime warranty, and makes the fitting process a breeze with their adjust-a-cuff and adjust-a-hem technology. Now is the perfect time to create a new image for your program. Chat with a live FJM representative or schedule your complimentary consultation today at fjminc.com/roundtable. That's fjminc.com/roundtable. Fred J. Miller Incorporated, family-owned and operated since 1960.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Marching Roundtable Podcast. This is Tim Hinton, the Beast of the Marching Arts. I get to talk to one of my favorite people today. Dr. Greg Basham's here. Greg, how are you?
I'm doing great. It's great to have a chance to speak with you and see you today. It's been a few weeks since we've seen each other.
It has been, and you and your wife and your whole family are all super impressive, and it's always fun when I get to talk with you. And listen, everybody, this is going to be interesting. We're talking about three things Greg wishes he had known when he first started his career in teaching, or however he wants to frame this, because Greg, the thing I'm excited about this is you were a band director, very successful for many years. Then you became an administrator on all kinds of different levels, and now you're a high school principal. So you have all these perspectives. Do you want to sort of lay that out a little bit about that career path?
Well, so, you know, I obviously had the great job that you can have, which was being a music teacher, right? And so that, you know, being a teacher is wonderful, but getting to make music with kids and use a vehicle that hopefully they enjoy was really outstanding, and I really enjoyed that. Never intended to be an administrator. My principal kept coming to me and going, hey, I need to go get a master's degree so I can make you department head. And so, in fact, I was reluctant because I never thought I would leave the band room. And so she came to me in December and went, did you go sign up for classes? And I went, no. She's like, well, by January, when you come back, I need you signed up for classes. And I was like, oh, okay. So, you know, went to school, became an administrator, was an assistant principal for 6 years, worked in the leadership development office with the Hillsborough Principal Pipeline for 4 years, and then I was lucky enough that they asked me to go and be a principal. And so this last year, they asked me to go be the principal of King High School, which has been just really enjoyable. I've enjoyed being back with the high school students, and those are my people.
Yeah, very cool. Well, listen, I mean, not only do you have the perspective of your own career and things you think back on, oh, when I started, I wish I'd known this, but now you're working with teachers on all levels, a lot of new teachers, a lot of new band directors, a lot of all this. So you have this incredible perspective. I imagine we could talk for the next 2 days about things you wish people knew or that you wish you had known, but I did ask you to narrow it down to three basic things. So what was the first thing that came to your mind?
Well, so the first one is, I think, and I touched on a little bit in the description of what I've been doing over the last 26 years, which is, you know, that as a band director and as a teacher, you have one of the great jobs that there is to have out there, right? So, you know, all of the magic happens in the classroom, Tim, every bit of it. Teachers are undoubtedly the person, well, in fact, there's a lot of research that tells us that teachers, of all the factors that can influence a student's learning, teachers are the number one factor. There's a, it's, well, I mean, and I think that most of us would can probably sit here and think on, even you can take the research aside, most of us can sit here and think on, you can name a teacher who influenced you, or who was, a lot of times it starts with, who was your favorite teacher? And then when you start to get into the why behind why that person was a favorite teacher, it wasn't even necessarily the one who let you get away with the most. Sometimes it's the teacher who was the most rigid with you or most strict or pushed you to do something. And so as music educators, you're put in that position all the time, right? You have this incredible vehicle. Most kids, a lot of kids are in band because, or orchestra or chorus, because it's something that they really enjoy. That's an outlet, and it touches them in an emotional way, in an intellectual way that other things do not. But even if they're the student who's in there just because it's not history class, you have this incredible vehicle for helping kids learn all kinds of things about not only music, but life, about how you work for excellence, how you go about getting better at something that's giving you a challenge, the interpersonal things that come up as a student in a band, orchestra, or chorus program, because of all the varieties of things that you're involved in throughout a 4-year process. And then, of course, one of my favorite things I tell my PE teachers, my football coaches, my band directors, my art teachers, anyone who has an opportunity to have kids in their program or in their classes over a 4-year period, they really can help you set the tone for what kind of culture and climate you're going to have at your school, because they have influence over the long arc of the student's career, not just 1 year or one period a day, right? And so being a teacher is definitely probably, I think, my favorite job, right? So I worked at the district office for 4 years, and a lot of folks spend a lot of their career trying to get to the district office. I spent 2 years in the district office and spent 2 years trying to get back to a school, because being with the kids is where the magic happens, right? And specifically, I tell my teachers all the time that my job is to support the work they're doing, whatever that might look like, because they're the ones that are going to be, as I say, I say the magic happens in your classroom. So, and it does. So I think that, you know, I think I wish, I think as a young educator, I would have appreciated that more. I think we get too caught up in the, especially in band, chorus, and orchestra, where we have a performance or music performance assessment coming up, or a band contest. We get too caught up in the product and what that's going to look like for that 10 minutes or 6 minutes or 7 minutes, right? And don't get to really take a deep breath and pay close attention to the process and all of the wonderful things that happen through that.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I love that. And I feel like we need to constantly be reminded of that fact all the time, because it is such a product-based thing. I've had some interesting conversations lately about with sort of working with disabled students and talking mm-hmm. about how, you know, the product-based mode is not necessarily the best one for all students or for all situations, or maybe at all. So it's a really interesting conversation. So you feel like just being constantly reminded the impact we're having, we're really here about teaching kids growing great citizens, you know, putting people out in the world who are successful. It's easy to forget that.
It is. It is. And again, sometimes we get so caught up in what it is that we need to make better, right? Because you're always chasing perfection, right? In music, you're chasing perfection. And so we get so caught up in what needs to be better that we don't always like just live in the moment, right? So this morning I got up and a friend of mine, David Webb, who's a band director in Virginia, and he taught at Linkhorn Middle School when I was at EC Glass. And David and I had the privilege of having a young man come through our program named Anthony Parthner. Well, Anthony was a ridiculously good bassoon player, even as a freshman in high school, right? And so David started him in middle school. And we knew and could see what a special player Anthony was, even as a young man, right? I still say Anthony, in fact, I didn't hear Anthony play bassoon at first. When I got to EC Glass, the first thing we did was marching band, right? And so I heard Anthony play tuba. And Anthony, he was a bassoon player by trade, but I still say to this day, one of the best tuba players I've ever heard, right? But that's what happened. And Anthony was one of those kids. He could pick up any instrument and give him a couple of days and he'd come in and be practically the best kid on any instrument, right? It's like infuriating for the other kids. But David, I woke up this morning to David's Facebook post. Anthony now conducts movie scores all the time, like all the time. He's done Mandalorian and he's done, most recently he conducted the score for Oppenheimer. And so when Goran won the Oscar last night, he gave a shout out to Anthony because he and Anthony have collaborated on a number of projects over time. And so David, you know, put that on his Facebook, and I was just sitting there thinking, you know, at the time I knew what a special kid Anthony was, but now, 20 some odd years later, because I'm not that old yet, it just makes you smile but it also makes you go, you know, did I give that kid enough time? Because Anthony would want to conduct, Mr. Basham, you're going to be gone tomorrow. Can I conduct the band? Well, yeah, Anthony can conduct the band. Or he would, as I said, we played March of the Belgian Paratroopers because I had two really good bassoon players, Anthony and another young lady, who was really a pretty good bassoon player in her own right, but she sat next to Anthony Parthner. So, you know, sorry about your luck. But then on the same concert, I think about how crazy I was, but then I also think about how all the kids were there, right? So I also got to play Molly on the Shore and Festive Overture on the same concert. And so, you know, he played everything, and he came in one day playing the solo to Molly on the Shore on the clarinet, which made Martha Kidd furious because he worked her fanny off, and Anthony probably worked it up in a couple of hours. But I go back to my point of, and that's really probably my number two thing, is live in the moment and, you know, enjoy the process, right? Like you get too caught up in, like, I spent all my time trying to chase the perfect performance with those three things. And I don't know that I fully appreciated at the age of 27 how incredible it was that I could even program those three things all on the same concert. So
yeah, I think back on some of the bands I was able to stand in front of, and I don't think I appreciated at the time like what those kids were doing and how hard they were working for me and for each other. And, you know, like, it's amazing. It's also very cool. I love that you shared the story about Anthony, because we all have students who have gone on to do amazing things. And as infuriating as Facebook can be, the positive side of it is I do get to see students. And I'm talking about students going off to do great things. Yes, I have some who have become professional musicians and I'm like super proud that I even had any interaction with them at all. You know, did I even have a millimeter of help for that career? But on the other hand, I see wonderful students in all kinds of fields, chemistry and flying airplanes. And I'm just thinking, like, I'm so proud that I was a part of that in some way. And you're right. At the time, it's hard to stop and think, you know, how great are these kids? And am I really helping to prepare them for whatever they're going to go out there and do to make the world a better place? So I appreciate that sort of stopping and appreciating.
Yeah. Well, and as an administrator now, I think of it in terms of what are my interactions? Because, you know, when you get to administration, you support teachers with what they're doing in the classroom. And quite often that can be working with a student who's having a bad day. Right. And so one of the things that I tell the students at the beginning of the year is listen, we all make bad choices. Okay. And you're inevitably or undoubtedly going to probably make a bad choice at some point this year. You're not going to be someplace you're supposed to. You're going to be late with some work. You know, or God forbid, you'll do something worse. Like, you know, you'll make a bad choice. Own that bad choice at the time and let's learn from it. And then let's move on to the next one. Because the next day, Dr. Basham's going to forget about that bad choice because you made it, right? But if you come in the office and and it's everybody else's fault or you're yelling and screaming or whatever it is, that's of course we're going to talk about that because that's part of the learning process because that's not how we handle things when you got to own your stuff, right? So, so for me, as I think about things like my time when I first started teaching, that's the evolution of that for me is that I try to apply that this is just, it's a moment. It's not, this doesn't define this kid, right? If someone had judged me on what kind of middle school student I was, you would never think I'd be sitting where I am, what I'm doing, you know, so.
Because that's really profound, Greg, because our society has this habit of doing the opposite, you know, of just, you've done that, that's who you are, and that's who you're always going to be. Yeah. What a wonderful gift you're giving those students to let them know that. That's, I'm sure your faculty and your students react to that tone you're creating.
Well, the bottom line
is and second chances.
The bottom line is, Tim, is I tell them all the time, listen, guys, I make bad choices. You know, I mean, we all do it. Maybe they're not always purposeful bad choices, but we all make them. And so, you know, recognize it, own it, learn from it, try not to do it again, and let's move on. So.
Yeah, and that's the same as, you know, hey, you totally flubbed a part of this song. Okay, well, that's why you go back and you practice it some more and you try again the next day. Yeah. That's a life lesson, man. That's it's so important.
I wish I had that philosophy when I was sitting in the practice room, you know, trying to work on my senior recital because, you know, I probably wouldn't have been as nervous the day I played my senior recital, right? Like, because it's, you know, how you move on. So, yeah, I definitely wish I had done that when I was younger.
Well, I hope everybody heard this little bit of conversation because I think this is really important. I love that. Okay, do you have a third thing?
I do. Hold on.
This is where we get down to the part where everybody's like, well, I really have three more. So how am I going
to? I'm not going to give you three more. The next one is, and I feel like the universe converged on me for this one. I have a big thing about at this age about listening to other folks. And I saw, as I mentioned, I was on Facebook this morning and I saw a quote that reminded me of just how smart Steve Jobs really was. And it was talking about when he was close to dying, one of the things that he said was, is that if you want to go fast, you walk alone, but if you want to go far, you go together, right? So in other words, take other people. And I think that's probably one of the biggest things that I learned, over the course of my career that I wish I had known when I came out of college. So, you know, I was very concerned about having a very good band. I made sure that I could do color guard. I knew how to play a brass instrument. I knew how to play not just like what you got in your brass techniques class. Like I played baritone in high school for part of the time. And then I played baritone in drum corps. I played baritone and march band, but, you know, and so I took the whole thing very seriously that if they dropped me on an island and I had to band direct by myself, that I would be able to talk intelligently to kids about how to play well. And that, you know, and so you come out of college and, of course, I wanted to arrange some of my music and I wrote my drill. And I was lucky enough that now Mrs. Basham, you know, had learned how to do color guard, so she did color guard. But even that, I did winter guard with her. And we, you know, it was one of those things where you felt like I need to be good at everything and I need to do everything myself. What was funny was I used to stand around and watch Lassiter and Kennesaw Mountain and go, you know, what the heck? You know, how come they're, well, what I realized was, is they were smart enough to bring other people to the table, right? Because they were older than me. Yeah. So, you know, you don't need to do everything yourself, right? Bring other people to the table and rely on group genius. More importantly, you never know how someone else is going to connect with a kid, right? And be able to help them along. The last two bands I taught, Halls and Newsome, were the ones where I think that I probably did it the best, because in both cases, I included a number of people on staff. And of course, at Halls, after my first year there, I hired you. And so to be our arranger, because I heard your arrangements. And I was like, wow, you know, that's what I want my band to sound like. Right. And so adding you started a learning process for me. And luckily I listened some of the time. I know you might have been like someone, let me call someone, talk about this Basham guy. He's hard headed. I can't talk.
Well, no, because we were too much alike, I think. I mean, because the way you're describing yourself is the same way I was too. But keep going. You're right. I mean, I loved being able to collaborating with you. But you're right. I mean, you had a lot of strong opinions, and that was challenging to me.
Yeah, and so, but and the people who were probably on staff at Halls would tell you that I had a lot of strong opinions. But over time, what I learned was to trust the other folks. And then when I got to Newsome, it was when it really all came together, because I actually sat down and talked to the kids first about what kind of band did they want to have and what did they want that to look like, and specifically what did they want to do. And then I went, okay, well, here's what's going to happen for us to do that. And then I sat down with the parents and I said, here's the band your kids want to have. You know, I can't do that by myself. Here's what we're going to need, right? And then I went in search of the folks to bring to the table. When I say I started with the kids at Newsome, that was something that I learned while I was at Halls. And I always go back to, I think people underestimate teenagers. We're Anthony Parkner's story already, but I'm going to give you another one. I had a young man at Halls who, and I think I've told you this story, he showed up to band practice one day on a skateboard, banging stuff off the curb. And, you know, we know that that was not why I was there. I was there to, you know, try to squeeze every ounce out of music and visual that I could. And he was a leader, whether I wanted him to be or not. Right. And so I spent one whole year basically wrestling that kid. My first year at Halls, wrestled him all year. And the other kids were like, they were on board with where we were trying to go, but he always seemed to be a little counterproductive. But again, kids listened to him. There was a certain faction of the band that just listened to him, right? And, you know, So I made him band captain. And no lie, the other band captain came in, and she was so brave, 17-year-old girl comes in and knocks on the door. But this was the kind of, I tried to have an open door policy with the kids. I'm like, if you have something you want to talk about, when you come in and shut the door, you can say what's on your mind. It's not, we're not going to do it in front of the whole band. But you can question me all you want in my office. So she came in and shut the door. She's like, Mr. Basham, she's like, what are you doing? Like, all of us. She's like, I've been sent in. I'm the sacrificial lamb. And I'm like, yeah. Right. What are you doing? You've made him band captain. And I was like, look, whether we want him to be a leader or not, he is. And we're either going to get him to use that power for good, or we're going to continue to let him use it for evil. So I made him band captain. The kid went to the Bands of America Summer Symposium. They turned him on fire. He came back, and it changed the band. It changed the Halls band for the next 3 years. And I'd like to say it's, you know, Baumgartner was the assistant band director when I was there, and Eric's taken the band over now and has been there for the next 16 years. And I'd like to say that it's changed the Halls band from that point on, because Eric is doing a great job and has tried to continue much of the work that we did together 16 years ago. And so I guess my last is listen, like, and listen to everybody, like, let the kids have a voice. And that creates ownership for you. People like to use the word buy-in. I don't like buy-in because buy-in to me is buy-in is I've convinced you of something, right? But when I let you sit at the table and be a part of the process, and I make sure that you understand that your voice is going to matter, you realize you have a stake in whatever we're doing. And so that ownership, now hopefully a bit of your own personal ego even kicks in that you understand that you're a part of whatever the product is, that you're as much responsible for it as anybody. So,
yeah, I think that's really powerful. I mean, even to me as a designer for marching band shows, like I tell every director, there's something in that show that those students need to create themselves. Yep. You know, create 24 counts and let the trumpets decide what they're going to do, you know, with some parameters. But like that sense of ownership of the show, because I've seen, I mean, since just to put it in the context of marching band, I've seen students who, like a color guard group, say they have no ability to have any autonomy. If you haven't told them exactly what to do, they just freeze. And yeah. Then you go to another program where they've taught them to have that ownership autonomy. The show becomes theirs. They're able to take it to that next level. Just another example of giving them that ownership and letting them feel like that they matter. Yeah. I love that you learned to listen. I feel like listening is a lost art in our sort of culture in general right now. But I love that that was an important point you wanted to make.
Well, to your point, Tim, even if you just if the kids were like, well, we would like, you know, I used to sit and talk to the kids about shows we had seen all fall. Which ones did we like? And as we thought about next year, where would they like to see us heading? Right. And it might be, well, we really enjoyed this one tune. And you and I'd often have that conversation where we would be going, okay, well, the kids really like this. And you go, well, yeah, but someone just did that so well. So now maybe it's this. And so that they had a part in the process so that when the show came out, the underclassmen understood that this is at least partly based on what we asked for, not just, well, this is four tunes Mr. Basham liked and that's what we're doing, right? And so it just changed the work that we were doing and made them part of it. It became not as hard and actually more fun. So,
yeah, absolutely. To the point you just made, if somebody's just hit a home run with a song, you either have to do it completely differently or you need to do the song that's adjacent to it, which there are lots of those, yeah. You know, and then explain that to the students. You know, and the point I just learned recently the hard way too, was that if a really, really great group didn't do well with something, don't try to be the one that's going to make it work. You would think, yeah, I would know that by now, but I just learned that this year finally.
Absolutely. You know, absolutely right. It's absolutely hilarious, right? I mean, but that's happened to all of us, right? Like, you go, well, but I think I can do that one. Oh, can you? Okay, well, have at it. And then,
I know, but it's like somehow I've got the answer. Yeah, well, I've learned that finally too. Yeah, but I do think letting your students know that you're listening, and clearly the story you told of the girl who felt safe to come in and share that difficult opinion, that's key, because I feel like band directors used to feel like, you know, wait, in the back in the day, shall we say, you know, they were this monolith and not to be questioned or whatever. But making yourself accessible and letting your students know that you're willing to listen to them is, and parents too, the whole shebang.
Listen, the bottom line is that it's every interaction you have with folks, it mostly it's about them, right? Like if they're in your office, you know, as an administrator, you can imagine I spend a lot of time talking to parents who are upset for situations that I didn't create. But I'm the principal, and so now I'm the guy they're talking to. And so it could feel very personal. But what I try to do is understand that they're upset at what the either miscommunication is or what the frustration is, and that ultimately they're fighting for their most prized possession, right? Like, no matter what, that child is their most prized possession. So I try to hear what they're saying and then talk about what we're going to do to be able to move forward and solve whatever the issue is without taking it personally when they're raising their voice or sometimes using language that we you would rather they didn't. Because in the end, it's they're trying to fight for the kid. And what I got to remind them is that I am too, right? And so, yeah, listening is important. And, you know, people are people. So
I love that. You know, I had a wonderful, wonderful principal, Dr. Jenny Springer, when I was in my last years of teaching before I left and became self-employed. And she explained that to me, Greg, so succinctly. She was like, she said so many times when parents come in and they're upset, she says, they just want me to hear them out. They just want me to listen. And she knew, she said, I will just sit there and just let them say what they want to say. And she says, once, the way I remember her explaining it to me, once they've had that opportunity to just say it and make sure that, and she makes sure that they know she's listening to them, right? She's listening to them. They're laying it out. She said, basically, once they had the opportunity to do that, that was 90% of it. And then it was like, okay, I've heard you. You've been able to say that, basically, you know. And now, like you said, and now here's what we can do. Let's fix this. Let's make this better. But they wanted to have the opportunity to be heard. I feel like that's key for all kinds of situations.
Yeah. Well, and then the other piece is that I often will look at them and go, well, what do you consider a resolution to this? And sometimes it's, well, I just wanted to make sure you heard me. And now, and so fine, then I'm off. But if they have an idea about what it is, that at least lets me know where they are so that I can then. So, and a lot of times that totally catches them off guard, because that's not what happened. This idea is for someone to look at you and go, well, what do you think is the resolution to this? And,
right. Yeah. Yeah. It's like the thing, if they tell you, if you go in with a complaint, you need to have a solution also, you know, be willing to say, here's how I think we can fix this too. That's just a good mode of operation.
Absolutely.
Greg, you're such a great educator and I consider you such a good friend. And thank you for stopping to have this conversation. This was really valuable information that I'm really happy to get to share.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to share my 27 years of perspective.
Well,
you know, you're great
at what you do. Do you say that again?
I say it's gone by fast.
Oh, gosh. Absolutely. Well, I'm glad you're out there doing it. Students at your school are very lucky, and teachers are very lucky to have you there. Thanks for talking to me today.
Thanks, Tim.
We hope you'll find and listen to the other podcasts in this series, including conversations with Howard Weinstein, Matt James, Frank Doherty, Jackie Gilley, Dr. Mary White, Trey Harris, Vincent Thomas, and Gene Monterostelli. Just put the words three things into the search bar at Marching Arts Education to find these podcasts. Thanks again to the sponsor of this podcast, Fred J. Miller Incorporated, found at fjminc.com. This is your host, Tim Hinton, the Beast of the Marching Arts. Find out more about me and the services I offer at beastofthemarchingarts.com. And check out my new paranormally themed bed and breakfast, the Phantom History House. See videos, pictures, and book your stay at phantomhistoryhouse.com.
If you're a business that works with band directors, marching bands, color guards, or drum lines, you should sponsor podcasts at the Marching Roundtable. Our listeners are the exact audience you're trying to reach. And with thousands of podcast downloads each month, it's a great way to directly reach your target audience. For more information, click on the sponsorship opportunities link at marchingroundtable.com or email Tim at tim@marchingroundtable.com. You can grow your business and help support what we're doing here on the podcast.